Hello, listeners. This is Iris, and we are reading the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a first look at the weather forecast, this one coming from KCRG. Some slick roads reported as snow remains a threat, especially early Wednesday morning. Strong winds and some wintry precipitation are the big highlights of a day of unpleasant weather conditions in eastern Iowa. A winter weather advisory is in effect this morning for parts of the area, generally in the counties in the northeast and east-central portions of Iowa. An area of low pressure is located near Lake Michigan this morning, and it's the main weather driver for us today. Precipitation wrapping around the backside of it will give us a good chance of some snow showers through the morning hours, with precipitation potentially mixing with or changing back to rain late in the morning into the afternoon. Eventually, some of this precipitation refocuses toward areas closer to the Mississippi River later in the day and generally becomes much more isolated by this evening into tonight. Much like we saw on Tuesday, precipitation that falls today will occur in air temperatures that will usually be above freezing. This significantly cuts into the ability for the snow to stick, needing heavier snowfall rates to overcome that limitation. As a result, additional accumulations will be hard to come by once the sun comes up. A broad area of a trace to 2 inches could occur, with most of that area falling much closer to the trace than the 2-inch totals. Those would be more likely in our northeast zone close to the Mississippi River. Despite all of the limiting factors, slick roads could develop at times, including during the morning commute as snow is falling. You should check on the road conditions before you head out and about today. Slow down in slick areas or when snow is falling, and give yourself more distance between you and the vehicle in front of you. Allow for extra stopping distance at intersections too, as the traction you typically expect may not be there. Winds will be strong throughout the day, with gusts already in the 30 to 40 mile per hour range early this morning. Those will quickly get into the 40 to 50 mile per hour range by the time we get toward late morning, and especially this afternoon. A modest decrease in wind speeds will be seen tonight, but gusts will probably still fall into the 30 to 40 miles per hour range throughout the night. If you have loose outdoor items, make sure to secure them or bring them inside, as they could be blown around. Bring in the garbage can today as soon as you can, or else it might end up down the street. While driving, pay special attention to keeping your vehicle steady in your lane, especially if you drive a larger, high-profile vehicle. Any leftover precipitation turns isolated tonight as clouds hang around. Temperatures may slip near or below freezing in some spots as winds stay fairly strong. We'll keep the blustery conditions around on Thursday, too, but gusts may fall toward the 25 to 35 mile per hour range. That will be an improvement over today's especially strong gusts. Otherwise, expect a mostly cloudy day with an isolated sprinkle or shower in the highs in the 40s. There's a chance for a bit more sunshine on Friday as winds turn even lighter. This is as the storm system, giving us the active weather, finally begins to leave the region and gives us a break. Temperatures would be a touch warmer as a result, with highs reaching the upper 40s to low 50s. Saturday keeps that trend going, with mostly sunny skies and highs back into the 50s for many areas. Another storm system approaches the state on Saturday night into Sunday, bringing the chance of showers back into our forecast picture. A few rumbles of thunder are possible during this time, too, though severe weather is looking unlikely at this point. A decent amount of rainfall could occur, too, with totals in excess of 1/4 inch possible in many areas. This system begins to move away by late Sunday night, hopefully carrying the clouds with it as we approach the start of next week. We're still several days away from the day of the partial solar eclipse on Monday, which means that the outlook for clouds versus clear skies could still change as we get closer. For now, our forecast contains partly cloudy skies on Monday, which is a better forecast than we're experiencing during 2017's partial eclipse. Fingers crossed that we can hold on to this or even improve it. Temperatures turn a bit warmer early in the week, with highs in the 60s from Monday into the middle of the week. Lows at night will only fall into the 40s. Another chance for some showers and storms arrives by next Wednesday as an active weather pattern continues. Now, on the front page of the Courier, we have three articles to read, and the top story is Israeli airstrikes kill 7 aid workers. With famine looming, group halts food delivery in Gaza. And we begin with a photograph showing people inspecting the damage to a car from that air raid. And the caption says, "People inspect the site Tuesday, where at least 7 World Central Kitchen workers were killed by an Israeli strike in the Gaza Strip." And it shows the faces of young people looking in through the window at the total destruction on the inside of this automobile. It looks like it's been burned out and there's almost nothing left. This story comes to us from the Associated Press, and the dateline is Deir el-Bala in the Gaza Strip. Israel faced anger from some of its closest allies Tuesday after 7 aid workers were killed in airstrikes in Gaza, prompting an international charity to suspend food deliveries to desperate Palestinians and raising alarm about the relief effort for the territory's mounting humanitarian crisis. The deaths of the World Central Kitchen workers threatened to set back efforts by the U.S. and other countries to open a maritime corridor for aid from Cyprus to help ease near-starvation conditions in Gaza's north. Ships still laden with some 240 tons of aid from the group turned back from Gaza just a day after arriving, according to Cyprus. Other humanitarian aid organizations suspended operations in Gaza after the airstrikes, saying it was no longer safe to offer help. Israel has allowed only a trickle of food and supplies into the devastated northern Gaza, where experts say famine is imminent. The dead from Monday night strikes included 3 British citizens, Polish and Australia nationals, a Canadian-American dual national, and a Palestinian. Those countries have been key backers of Israel's nearly 6-month-old offensive in Gaza, and several of them condemned the killings. Israel already faces growing isolation amid mounting international criticism of the Gaza assault. On the same day as the deadly airstrikes, Israel stirred more fears by apparently striking Iran's consulate in Damascus, killing 2 Iranian generals. The government moved to shut down a foreign media outlet, Qatari-owned Al Jazeera Television. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that the military had carried out the unintended strike on innocent people. He said officials were investigating and would work to ensure it did not happen again. World Central Kitchen said it had coordinated with the Israeli military over the movement of its cars. 3 vehicles moving at large distances apart were hit in succession. They were left incinerated and mangled, indicating multiple targeted strikes. At least one of the vehicles had the charity's logo printed across its roof to make it identifiable from the air, and the ordnance punched a hole through that roof. Footage showed the bodies at a hospital in the central Gaza town of Deir el-Bala, several of them wearing protective gear with the charity's logo. Israeli TV said the initial military investigation found that the army identified the cars carrying World Central Kitchen's workers arriving at its warehouse and observed suspected militants nearby. 30 minutes later, the vehicles were struck by the Air Force as they headed south. The reports said it was not clear who ordered the strikes or why. Celebrity chef José Andrés who founded the World Central Kitchen charity, said he was heartbroken by the deaths. Quote, "The Israeli government needs to stop this indiscriminate killing. It needs to stop restricting humanitarian aid, stop killing civilians and aid workers, and stop using food as a weapon," he wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. The U.S., Britain, Poland, Australia, and Canada all called on Israel to give answers on the deaths. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant launched an investigation and ordered the opening of a joint situation room, enabling coordination between the military and aid groups. But anger among its allies could put new pressure on Israel. The British government summoned Israel's ambassador for a rebuke and called for an immediate humanitarian pause to allow more aid in and the release of hostages. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak told Netanyahu that he was, quote, appalled by the workers' deaths and described the situation in Gaza as, quote, increasingly intolerable. White House National Security spokesman John Kirby said the U.S. was outraged to hear of the strikes. He said the Israeli military must do much more to avoid conflict and ensure the safety of aid convoys. The deaths sent a further chill through UN agencies and other aid groups that have said for months that sending truck convoys around Gaza, particularly in the north, has been extremely difficult because of the military's failure to either grant permission or ensure safe passage. Israel has barred UNRWA, UNRWA, the main UN agency in Gaza, from making deliveries to the north. The U.S. and other countries have been working to set up the sea passage from Cyprus to get around the difficulties. World Central Kitchen was key to the new route. It and the United Arab Emirates sent a pilot shipment last month. Their second delivery of around 400 tons of food and supplies arrived in three ships to Gaza hours before the strikes on the convoy. About 100 tons were unloaded before the charity suspended operations, and the rest was being taken back to Cyprus. Cypriot Foreign Ministry spokesman Theodoros Gotis said. Still, Cypriot President Nikos Christodoulidis said Tuesday that ship deliveries would continue. ANRA, a Washington-based aid group that has been operating in the Palestinian territory for decades, said that it was taking the unprecedented step of pausing its own operations in Gaza, where it had been helping to provide around 150,000 meals daily. Jamie McColtrick, a United Nations humanitarian coordinator for the Palestinian territories, said the strikes were, quote, not an isolated incident. The UN says more than 180 humanitarian workers have been killed in the war. Renters could have to show need for assistance animals. Story written by Tom Barton of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Dateline Des Moines. Landlords could require tenants to provide documentation if they need an assistance animal under legislation headed to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds for her signature. Senate File 2268 changes how landlords respond to requests from individuals with a disability who request to keep an assistance animal or service animal as a reasonable accommodation in housing. Instead of immediately waiving charges and lease restrictions on pets, landlords could evaluate requests and must respond promptly. The bill also lists when landlords can deny requests, such as for a financial burden or safety concerns. It unanimously passed the Iowa Senate on Monday after being amended by the Iowa House. The bill was amended to provide written proof of disability and the need for an assistance animal from out-of-state health care providers, in addition to in-state providers. It also eliminates the term service animal in some areas of the bill because the term still falls under the federal definition of assistance animals. Senator Scott Webster, the bill's floor manager and a Republican from Bettendorf, said the legislation, quote, will help tremendously to make sure those in need of assistance animals can get them while preventing inappropriate use. Under the bill, if a person's disability or disability-related need for an assistance animal is not readily apparent, a landlord can request a letter from a licensed health care professional verifying the individual has a disability and the necessity of the animal for the tenant's well-being. However, tenants are not required to disclose their disability. Rather, they need only disclose enough information to document their disability-related need for an assistance animal. Landlords could also request certification of the patient-provider relationship and whether the provider, quote, received a separate or additional fee or other form of compensation solely in exchange for making the written finding of their disability-related need for an assistance animal. The bill defines assistance animal as an animal that qualifies as a reasonable accommodation under the Federal Fair Housing Act. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development defines an assistance animal as one that provides assistance or performs tasks for the benefit of a person with a disability, or that provides emotional support that alleviates one or more identified effects of a person's disability. Service animal means a dog or a miniature horse as set forth in regulations under the Americans with Disabilities Act that is trained to perform tasks on behalf of the individual due to the disability. Landlords still would be required to make reasonable accommodations for assistance and service animals in their rules, policies, practices, and services normally required for pets. The bill states it, quote, shall not be construed to restrict existing federal law related to a person's right to a reasonable accommodation and equal access to housing, including but not limited to the Federal Fair Housing Act, unquote. Under the bill, landlords could deny a request for an accommodation for an assistance animal or service animal if one of the following is true. Doing so would impose an undue financial and administrative hardship on the landlord, or it would fundamentally alter the nature of the landlord's operations, or it would pose a direct threat to the safety or health of others that cannot be reduced or eliminated by a reasonable accommodation, or it would cause substantial physical damage to the property of others that cannot be reduced or eliminated by a reasonable accommodation, or it is not otherwise reasonable. A tenant with an assistance or service animal would be liable for any damage done by the animal to the leased premises, the landlord's property, or any other property. Landlords may also require proof of compliance with state and local licensing and vaccination requirements for each assistance or service animal. They would be required to provide a written determination regarding a person's request for an assistance animal. The Iowa Developmental Disabilities Council and Disability Rights Iowa were registered against the bill. Representative Josh Turek, a Democrat from Council Bluffs, is a Paralympian, a 2-time gold medalist in wheelchair basketball, and disability advocate. Turek said the bill attempts to clarify the distinction between an emotional support animal and a trained service animal. Quote, we want to avoid any unintentional consequences of disabled individuals that really need the service animal, Turek said on the House floor. Quote, we want to have more regulation on the emotional support animals without adding any unnecessary burdens to the disabled individuals or eroding any of those protections, unquote. Representative Jacob Bossman, a Republican from Sioux City, who floor managed the bill in the House, said it is modeled after California law and the Federal Fair Housing Act. Quote, I believe it establishes clear, common sense regulations that are transparent and will protect good acting tenants and landlords and make this system sustainable well into the future, Bossman said during floor debate. Representative Heather Mattson, an Ankeny Democrat who served on the subcommittee that advanced the bill, said, While the bill does not address all of her concerns related to documentation requirements for assistance animals, quote, I do think that this amended bill is a great example of bipartisan compromise that clarifies a framework and provides a clearer structure for landlords to follow that remains in compliance with federal law. Looting would become a crime under bill headed to Reynolds. The story written by the Courier Des Moines Bureau, and the dateline is Des Moines. A bill creating a new crime of looting would soon become Iowa law, outlining new criminal and civil punishments for group theft. Iowa House File 2598, passed by Senate lawmakers on Monday, would define looting as two or more people entering a home, place of business, or vehicle and stealing or damaging property. Looting would be a Class C felony, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. If the combined value of stolen property is more than $10,000, the person has previously been convicted of looting, or the looting is done with a dangerous weapon. Looting property valued between $1,000 and $10,000 would carry a prison sentence between 1.5 years and 5 years. If the property is between $300 and $1,000, the looting would be an aggravated misdemeanor and carry a prison sentence of up to 2 years. The bill would also allow somebody whose business or property is directly or indirectly damaged by an act of looting to bring civil action against a person who is engaged in the looting. The bill passed the Senate 42-6. The bill is now eligible to be signed into law by our Governor Kim Reynolds, a Republican. Senator Tony Bisignano, one of the 6 Democrats to vote against the bill, said he was concerned about the broad language allowing someone who is, quote, indirectly injured by looting to sue the offender. Senator Scott Webster, a Republican from Bettendorf, the bill's floor manager, said that although looting is rare in Iowa, lawmakers should be proactive and prepare to respond to organized theft. Quote, this is going to help our small business, our small retail mom-and-pop, grandma-and-grandpa stores, to make sure that those particular cases have an avenue besides just shoplifting or retail theft, Webster said. Increased trespassing penalties. The penalties for trespassing while hunting would be increased under legislation approved by the Senate. The various fines for trespassing while hunting would be increased from $260 to $500 for a first violation, from $645 to $1,000 for a second violation, and from $1,285 to $1,500 for all other violations. When, during floor debate in the Senate, a Democratic senator questioned the need for the legislation, Senator Tom Shipley, a Republican from Nottoway, said trespassing is a serious issue in his district and that current fines do not appear to be sufficient deterrent. With its passage out of the Senate on a 39-9 vote, House File 2310, having previously passed the House, heads to our Governor Kim Reynolds for her consideration. Public funding for church-managed program. Counties and townships would be allowed to devote money to religious organizations for public services under a bill approved by the Iowa Senate. The bill would allow church-managed organizations to receive public money if it is for a project, quote, that benefits the public and does not require any religious or secular services, educational programs, or participation requirements, unquote. The bill's supporters have said such services could include food pantries, homeless shelters, and child care. The bill, House File 2264, passed the Senate on a 38-10 vote, with 4 Democrats joining Republicans in support. The bill previously passed the House with even stronger bipartisan support, with a vote of 93-2. It must return to that chamber for second approval because it was amended Monday by the Senate. From there, it would move to Governor Kim Reynolds for her consideration. Iowa Attorney General joins brief to overturn gun law. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd joined a multi-state coalition that weighed in support of a lawsuit seeking to overturn Illinois' assault weapons ban. The lawsuit was brought by a national gun rights group seeking to overturn gun restrictions Illinois Governor J.P. Pritzker signed into law in 2023. The law bans the sale of AR-15s and other assault weapons, as well as large magazines and other attachments. A federal appeals court upheld Illinois' law last year, arguing the assault weapons banned by the law are militaristic and more closely aligned with machine guns, allowing them to be regulated under the Second Amendment. The appeals court determined that arms in the Second Amendment does not include weapons used primarily for military purposes. The National Association for Gun Rights is appealing the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. In a court brief joined by Byrd, the 27 Republican-led states argue that the appeals court decision was mistaken and lacks historical precedent. They argue that the Supreme Court's past decisions show the law is unconstitutional. Quote, Illinois' gun ban is an outright assault on Americans' Second Amendment rights, Byrd said in a statement. Quote, every American has a fundamental right to protect themselves and their loved ones. My office is urging the U.S. Supreme Court to do the right thing and protect Americans' constitutional rights, unquote. Uvalde mayor resigns in wake of shooting report. Robb Elementary probe found no wrongdoing in lengthy school response. This story was filed by the Associated Press, and the dateline is Austin, Texas. City of Uvalde Mayor Cody Smith has resigned effective immediately, vacating his post the same week the police chief of the small Texas city is expected to depart, 2 years after one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Smith said in a statement Monday that he needed to focus on his health and thanked the Uvalde community for its support during his ongoing recovery from recent unexpected health issues. He did not elaborate. The decision comes weeks after an independent report commissioned by the city defended the actions of local officers during the botched response by nearly 400 local, state, and federal law enforcement officials to the May 2022 Robb Elementary School shooting that left 21 dead. Uvalde City Council members were expected to meet Tuesday afternoon and could discuss the report in a private session. Last week, the meeting was postponed over concerns for the mayor's health. Smith's announcement follows one by Uvalde Police Chief Daniel Rodriguez that he would step down April 6th after the city's report found no wrongdoing by local officers. New routes help vessels pass through wreckage. Feds and state working to ease economic toll after bridge collapse. Story filed by the Associated Press, and the dateline is Baltimore, Maryland. Crews opened a second temporary channel Tuesday, allowing a limited amount of maritime traffic to bypass the mangled wreckage of Baltimore's collapsed Francis Scott Key Bridge, which had blocked the vital port's main shipping channel since its destruction a week ago. Work is ongoing to open a third channel that will allow larger vessels to pass through the bottleneck and restore more commercial activity, officials announced Tuesday. The channels are open primarily to vessels involved in the cleanup effort, along with some barges and tugs that have been stuck in the port of Baltimore. A tugboat pushing a fuel barge was the first vessel to use an alternative channel late Monday. It was supplying jet fuel to Delaware's Dover Air Force Base. Governor Wes Moore said rough weather over the past 2 days has made the challenging salvage effort even more daunting. Conditions have been unsafe for divers trying to recover the bodies of the four construction workers believed trapped underwater. Earlier Tuesday, Moore visited one of two centers the Small Business Administration opened to help companies. And now, listeners, we'd just like to take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, April 3rd, on IRIS, That's IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now let's continue reading local news from the Courier. Waverly's West Cedar Elementary purchased for housing, barred from private school usage. Story written by Andy Malone. Dateline Waverly. West Cedar Elementary School is one step closer to being barred from private school usage and turned into housing for people who are disadvantaged. The City Council voted 6-0 on Monday on behalf of the Waverly Low Rent Housing Agency and Housing Commission to purchase the 3.43 acres at 221 15th Street Northwest for $5,000 from the Waverly Shell Rock School District. The council's approval also included a stipulation reflecting a deed restriction that disallows the public school building from being used as a competing private or charter school. There was no substantive debate on the purchase for low-income rental housing aimed at people who are elderly or disabled. Councilmember Rodney Drenkow was absent. The agreement states that closing will occur on a date mutually agreed upon by the parties before June 30th. The Board of Education approved the sale in February after rejecting a significantly higher bid of $70,000 from Inspired Life. Its hope had been to turn it into a private school in partnership with Waterloo Christian School. Housing plans. The property is viewed as an ideal location for the cost-effective expansion of the nearby 155 units at Waverly Homes and Waverly Manor. Their address is 320 15th Street Northwest, and Red Cedar Place at 426 16th Street Northwest, according to council meeting documents. The Low Rent Housing Agency manages two federally subsidized apartment complexes for the elderly under the direction of the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Waverly Housing Commission, its website states. Officials made clear Monday that the purchase is paid for through the agency and commission's budget, not the city. The building became available after voters approved a referendum in 2021 to construct two new elementary schools to replace three current schools. West Cedar's students are moving at the end of the school year. Meeting documents state that a consultant has been brought on board to investigate possible redevelopment for housing there. Documents do not make clear whether a decision has been made on whether to convert the current school building to housing or raise it and start over. If the commission keeps the current school building, the Courier previously reported that 10 to 15 units could be created. A figure wasn't immediately available for how much housing could fit within the confines of the property if the school were torn down. Waterloo family displaced by lightning strike and fire on Friday night. Angela Sturm McLaughlin wrote this story, and the dateline is Waterloo. A family has been displaced after lightning struck their home late Friday night. Here we have a photograph showing the home, and it shows severe fire damage, and it looks like it might be a total loss. According to Waterloo Fire Rescue, lightning struck the home at 623 Campbell Avenue. Flames then engulfed the back portion of the home. The family was able to escape without injury, and family pets were later rescued. A representative from Waterloo Fire Rescue confirmed the damage was significant. New thrift store in Waterloo to further mission of helping those with disabilities. Dateline Waterloo. A Clear Lake-based nonprofit has been working to fill shelves and racks with items for its new thrift store in Waterloo. One Vision Thrift Store opened Monday at 2060 Sovia Drive on Suite 115. One Vision supports people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The organization opened its door in 1971 in Clear Lake as a campus of 10 houses to provide support for people with disabilities. Formerly known as Handicap Village and Opportunity Village, it now serves more than 300 people in 23 communities in northern Iowa. While the nonprofit is not bringing its programs to the Cedar Valley, thrift store revenues will support its work as well as provide employment opportunities. This is One Vision's third thrift store, with the other two in Clear Lake and Fort Dodge. Shelby Fleming, the store's brand manager, and her team have been working to set up the 10,000-square-foot building since the beginning of March. The sales floor takes up 75% of that space. She said more than 10,000 items have been put out for sale, although the store is not as full as she wants it to be. There are racks of men's and women's and children's clothes, shoes, bags, jewelry, and accessories, home decor, kitchenwares, and furniture. The current stock came from excess donations at the other two stores. There are no set prices, and everything gets marked according to its value. Fleming said the average price of a piece of adult clothing is around $8, while children's clothing is around $4. The average price of everything in the store is $6. Fleming said the organization decided to create a store in Waterloo because it saw a need. She said they looked at the Ames and Des Moines areas, but settled on the Cedar Valley. Quote, based on the median income and population, the need for a thrift store was really here, she said. Local partners also enticed them. The organization previously partnered with Exceptional Persons Incorporated, another group that works with people with disabilities. Fleming said the organization could partner with EPI to employ those with special needs. Apart from assisting an underserved community, One Vision hopes to further provide the area with a place to recycle unwanted goods. Quote, our goal is to provide, you know, quality used items for the community, while also helping a community keep things out of their landfill, Fleming said. We're hoping to bring jobs and volunteer opportunities and partnership opportunities. In 2023, the organization saved 1.5 million pounds of items from the landfill. She expects that number will be above 2 million pounds this year. Items that don't sell are mailed to other organizations to sell, recycle, and repurpose. The store is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The donation drop-off is open whenever the store is open. The store accepts most items except large appliances, baby furniture such as cribs, and car seats, stereos, and VHS tapes, encyclopedias and textbooks, items with odor or excess animal hair, non-working electrical items, paint or hazardous materials, tires, TVs, computers, or ruined items. The organization plans to hire 4 to 6 staff members as well as volunteers. Those interested can apply at onevision.org. Waterloo semi-trailer crash topples store sign and injures multiple people. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. And we begin with a photograph of the crash scene, and we see a semi-truck that's run into a pole that had a sign for Dollar General on it. And it was pulling a flatbed trailer that had John Deere farm equipment loaded on it. And in this picture, we see a patient being loaded onto an ambulance on the street right next to the semi-truck. Dateline Waterloo. Authorities are investigating a Tuesday afternoon semi-tractor trailer crash that sent people to the hospital. Details weren't immediately available, but initial reports indicate a half dozen vehicles were involved in the collision at the intersection of Washington Street and Hawthorne Avenue. A semi involved in the accident came to rest on the sidewalk in front of the Dollar Tree store. A sign for the store was toppled and landed crumpled in the parking lot. Waterloo police and firefighters were on the scene. Millions to see total solar eclipse across 15 states. Iowans expected to experience a partial eclipse. Story filed by Melody Parker. Dateline Cedar Falls. On Monday, the moon will pass between the sun and earth. Millions of Americans across 15 states will experience totality during the solar eclipse, when the moon completely covers the sun. According to NASA, the eclipse's path of totality enters the United States and Texas and will travel through Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, as well as slivers of Tennessee and Michigan. Iowans will experience a partial solar eclipse. Quote, "The experience of seeing a total solar eclipse, even a partial eclipse, is unusual. We think of the sun as this friendly yellow sun-made raisin box disk that rises in the morning and sets in the evening. When it goes completely dark in the middle of the day, the metamorphosis is both wonderful and shocking," said Tom Hockey, astronomy professor at the University of Northern Iowa. Hockey won't be here for the partial eclipse. Instead, he is heading a group of UNI students into the path of totality in northern Indiana. With fingers crossed for clear, sunny blue sky, the day trippers will watch as the moon obscures the sun and makes the sun's atmosphere, the corona, easier to see. NASA says the sun's diameter is about 400 times larger than the moon's, and the sun is almost 400 times further away from us than the moon is. This combination makes the sun and moon appear nearly the same size in our sky, setting up a spectacular show when they align. Hockey is excited. Quote, "A total solar eclipse hits you at gut level. You see the outer layers of the sun, strange and colorful shapes unlike anything anyone has ever seen before. The quality of light eerily changes just before totality," he enthused. Scientists expect structure and streamers to be more noticeable during this eclipse because the sun is more active with sunspots and other surface activity. This is the second total solar eclipse in the past 7 years. That's amazing and unusual to have two eclipses happen so close together, Hockey noted. In 2017, totality lasted 2 minutes and 42 seconds. Totality will last longer during Monday's eclipse, according to astronomers, because the moon is closer to the Earth and the shadow on the sun will be wider. One nugget periodically popping up on the internet notes that Bonnie Tyler's song, "Total Eclipse of the Heart," runs 4 minutes and 30 seconds, which is a bit longer than Monday's totality, expected to last 4 minutes and 27 seconds. Hockey is a self-described eclipse chaser. Quote, "It goes all the way back to when I was 10 years old and watched a partial solar eclipse in my front yard in Indiana. I didn't see a total solar eclipse until 1991, when I read one would be visible in the U.S. from Hawaii. What's the worst that could happen? I could get clouded out, but I'd be in Hawaii. There didn't seem to be a downside, so I went," he explained. He was hooked. Quote, "I don't care where I have to go to see one," Hockey confessed. He's traveled to Chile, Paraguay, Argentina, Mongolia, Romania, Turkey, and Missouri for the chance of viewing another total solar eclipse. Quote, "Being an eclipse chaser is a wonderful excuse to travel to parts of the world you wouldn't ordinarily think of if you weren't drawn by an eclipse. Of course, the sun and moon don't make your travel plans. It may be clouded, but it's still fun to go." Hockey, who teaches the history of astronomy, is author of the recently published book America's First Eclipse Chasers, Stories of Science, Planet Vulcan, Quicksand, and the Railroad Boom. Quote, "It's not a cover-to-cover read. You can pick up and choose what you want to read. You can read the opening chapters or skip to the actual events," Hockey said. In simple terms, he describes the astronomical tools of the trade at the time and how they worked or didn't, and tells chaotic stories about the first eclipse chasers. At this point in the story, they show a photograph of an almost total solar eclipse, and we see beams of light coming from behind the disk where the sun is, and we see the diamond ring effect where there's a bright portion still showing of the sun, and we can see stars in the background, and it's during daytime. Now back to the story. He writes with wit and humor about the 1869 total solar eclipse, in particular, that fell in the Midwest, particularly over Iowa. It was the first time in the United States that astronomers and tourists in large numbers made organized pilgrimages to see this awesome preternatural pageant in the sky, Hockey writes. The 1869 path of totality tracked over the house where Hockey now lives in Cedar Falls. The track made a nearly perfect diagonal across Iowa, and here it was to be at its widest compared to other states. This assured that proportionately more people in this state were under the shadow of the moon than in any other. Iowa, too, was the prime target for most 1869 solar eclipse wayfarers, he wrote, including famous astronomers like Simon Newcomb and Maria Mitchell. Quote, some places in Iowa can be found where astronomers set up their equipment to measure the eclipse. The spot in Des Moines is now underneath an interstate ramp, and other places simply no longer exist, unquote. The book idea percolated for many years, Hockey admitted. The genesis of it was whining. As a professor of the history of astronomy, I whined that the Midwest was at a disadvantage for total eclipses, which seems to take place on the west or east coasts. The 2017 eclipse was the spark that got me going, unquote. Safe viewing of a solar eclipse requires proper protective eye gear. Staring at the sun with a naked eye can cause eye damage or permanent vision loss. Quote, sunglasses aren't enough, Hockey pointed out. Even a brief look at a partial eclipse can cause damage. Wear only glasses specifically designed for solar eclipse events. Looking at the eclipse through an unfiltered camera, even one on your cell phone, will not protect your eyes from damage, even with eye protection, NASA cautions. Optical devices concentrate solar rays that damage the eyes. Hockey said it's okay to look at the sun with the naked eye during those few minutes of totality when the sun is completely blotted out. But as soon as the sun begins to reemerge, remember to immediately put back on your eye protection. America's first eclipse chasers, Stories of Science, Planet Vulcan, Quicksand, and the Railroad Boom, published by Springer in association with Praxis Publishing, is available from online booksellers. Waterloo couple charged with dependent adult abuse in guardianship of relative. The story was filed by Jeff Reinitz, and the dateline is Waterloo. A Waterloo couple has been arrested after a relative was found living with untreated bed sores and other ailments in January. Police arrested Jerry Lee Richards Trask, 51, and Sunshine Marie Trask, 40, on Thursday for charges of intentional dependent adult abuse, a felony. They were later released pending trial. Court records indicate Richard Trask's 66-year-old sister was found with bed sores that went almost to the bone. Quote, per medical providers treating her, her condition resulted from sitting in a chair or lying in a bed for months without access to repositioning, adequate hygiene, or regular medical care, the court records state. The woman had been diagnosed with mental illness as a child and had been cared for by her mother. The mother passed away 9 years ago, and Richards Trask took over the court-ordered guardianship in 2015 and oversaw her daily activities, records state. During a June 2023 medical visit, doctors expressed concern about the condition of the woman's skin and suggested moving her to a higher level of care, but no follow-up visits were scheduled. Then on January 11, 2024, paramedics were called to their home at 639 Walgate Avenue and found the woman on the floor covered in urine and feces, records state. She was taken to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center for treatment, where doctors noticed the bed sores and found she was suffering from COVID-19 and sepsis. She was placed on a respirator and later moved to a Des Moines hospital. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services sought an emergency order to treat the woman in March, while measures were taken to find an alternative guardian, court records state. For Part Harmony, Proud Image, River City Choruses, join voices for spring concert. Story written by Melody Parker. Dateline Waterloo. For the third consecutive year, the Proud Image Chorus is joining voices with the River City Chorus of Mason City to present a spring extravaganza on April 13th. Quote, listen to the music is at 7 p.m. at Waterloo West High School. The 2019 Illinois Quartet Champions Center Ring will be featured. Tickets are $15 in advance at proudimagechorus.org, $20 at the door, and $5 for students. Contact any chorus member or call area code 515-979-9054. David Boyd from Proud Image Chorus directs the all-male choruses. Quote, between the two choruses, we produce a musical experience that is wonderful, and we just make a great sound. We think of ourselves as a cappella choruses. We've moved away from the more traditional title of barbershop, doing more modern songs that people recognize. But harmonizing is what we do, and again, the sound we're able to create with that many guys singing four-part harmony is just wonderful, Boyd said. Quote, it's a great collaboration. It's very helpful to have more men singing when we get into a show. It's much easier to fill up the space with sound, and it just sounds glorious, agreed Rod Bean, vice president of music for River City Chorus. About 60 men will fill the risers to perform a variety of pop and classic hits from the 60s, 70s, and 80s in barbershop-style four-part harmonies. Quote, we're doing John Denver's Take Me Home Country Roads, Jimmy Dean's King of the Road, the Doobie Brothers' Listen to the Music, Billy Joel's For the Longest Time, and a wide variety of songs, said Bean. The men will also sing inspirational and patriotic songs, as well as several classic barbershop songs. Smile, popularized in Charlie Chaplin movies, and a signature song for the River City Chorus, will be performed. A rendition of Unchained Melody is guaranteed to move audiences, Boyd said, and I'll Walk with God is a very powerful rendition. We'll be singing God Bless the USA, and I hope when we get the part about we'll gladly stand up to you and defend her still today, that people will literally get out of their chairs and stand up. We've had that happen before, and it's a very moving moment, Boyd said. In addition, Proud Image member Dan Bogart will solo on a vaunting vision of Ghost Riders in the Sky. The two choruses first came together for a series of concerts in the last 3 years that have played to sellout crowds in Waterloo and Mason City. Working together has revitalized membership in both chapters, Boyd said. Barbershop music brings men together in harmony and fellowship to sing a variety of music, including barbershop standards to classics, pop, rock, and show tunes. Waterloo's chorus attracts members from throughout the Cedar Valley. The River City Chorus attracts singers from throughout North Iowa, including Britt, Osage, Lake Mills, and surrounding communities. Quote, we have some fellows travel to Waterloo each week to sing, and some Proud Image guys come to sing with us every week, he explained. Quote, we all made some really good friends. The big thing is the camaraderie between the guys, which is fantastic. There's a wide range of ages from 16 and 18 to 80. We have farmers, businessmen, construction workers, retirees, anyone with a love for music and singing. We wound up on the risers. The organization of both choruses is strong, and we try to keep membership dues low, said Bean, who lives in Belmont and joined 40 years ago. In addition to spring, fall, and holiday concerts, the combined choruses have performed the national anthem at numerous major events, including University of Northern Iowa basketball games, a tractor pull in Rockville, with an audience of 4,000 to 5,000 people in the stands, and recently for the Iowa Wolves in Des Moines. Iowa City Chorus rehearses every Monday night from 7:30 to 10 p.m. at Music Man Square. Proud Image meets 7 p.m. each Tuesday at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Evansdale. Boyd is thrilled that most of the recent new members are in their 20s. Quote, "Joining these two choruses together has really revitalized interest in the organizations," he said. "We've seen a real uptick in the number of young guys joining the craft. Hopefully, we'll leave a legacy for these guys who will carry the hobby on into the future." Story looks to expand along Main Street in Cedar Falls. Story by Andy Malone. The well-known Deary family is expanding its footprint on Main Street beyond the corridor between University Avenue and Searley Boulevard. It's looking to execute a plan for the property that was formerly home to Simpson Furniture and Art Van Furniture in 2300 Main Street. Doing business as 7D LLC, the hope is to add an auto detailing shop in approximately 36,000 square feet of the 50,000 square foot space on the north end of the building, according to Chris Fischels, representing Deary. Brakes Plus sits on the south end at 2322 Main Street. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just visit our website. That's iowaradioreading.org. at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.